So, welcome to Let's Humanize the Workplace. My name is Vivian Acqua, and I'm a certified diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant. Before I dive into today's topic, I want to address the talent shortage in Europe. No, this is real. This is not a joke. This is real, where so many companies at the moment right now are dealing with the challenges around, retaining talent, but also attracting talent, right? And I want to be able to share a tip, a valuable tip for you to engage with that, because boosting DEI in your organization can maybe feel daunting, can maybe feel challenging, but what if there was a way for you to maximize inclusion in a sustainable way, maximize inclusion in a way that is also impactful? So I created the Amplify DEI cards. You see the card decks behind me. You'll see them when I enlarge my image as well. But those card decks are, let's say, they contain thought-provoking prompts where you can engage with your team, or you can start your individual journey by investing in a self card deck, right? So basically, for people who follow me, who know me, they know I seduce people with food. Every time that I talk about DEI, I seduce people with food. So with this card deck, I also played around with food, where you can touch the where you can share the card decks from spicy, mild, or hot, where it contains jalapeno, paprika, or scotch bonnet. And you can also see those cards as a way for you to deepen your inclusive leadership journey, right? So maybe you're unaware, maybe you have reached the level of awareness, or maybe you want some action. These categories are all available as well. Know that with the Amplify DEI card deck, some of the QR codes, they lead to a video where you, together with your team or together with family members or friends, can learn a little bit more about the topic without asking somebody to open up trauma or talk about their trauma from their Pandora's box, right? So it's a safe way to engage in DEI topics and DEI conversations. And I want to let you know that I have an end of year offer. So I'll let you know. I'll reshare the link later on in this case, but know that you can use the links on bit.ly, that AMP DEI cards, EOOY24, and you can lead to that. But today, I have a very important guest today, and today I wasn't aware that it is International Men's Day. So I'm really glad that I have her as my guest speaker for today, because today's theme is about positive male role models. And how can we activate positive male role models? Well, we could use Hera Ali's book, Her Allies, which is a practical toolkit to help men lead at their advocacy. So let me properly introduce her. Let me remove the slide deck and properly introduce her, because I have a whole script here. So Hera Ali is an inspiring leadership development specialist. She's also an executive career coach and an award-winning author of two books. Her work has been featured by prestigious outlets like Harvard Business Review, Forbes, the BBC, Harper's Bazaar, and so on and so on. And I'm grateful that she said yes. I've been following her for a while now, and I was just like, okay, let me reach out to her. Will she say yes? But luckily, she said yes immediately. And I am going to ask her all the questions, but also know that if you have any questions that is related to her work, that is related to what she's doing regarding allyship, know that you can share your questions as well. So, Hera, I am excited about having you here. Can you tell?
Yes, and I am equally excited to be here. Thank you so much. I've been following your work as well, and I think you're doing something amazing. So, pleasure to
Thank
be
you.
here.
Thank you. Thank you. So let's start with the first question. Why do we need to humanize the workplace? What's your take on that?
Great. So, I think, well, humanizing workplace is essential because, honestly, very simply, at its very core, organizations are made of human beings, not machines. Yeah. And when we acknowledge and embrace the humanity of our workforce, we create an environment where people feel valued, respected, and they feel safe. And employees bring their full selves to the work. I always say this, including their emotions, their experiences, and their challenges. And these factors, I guess, profoundly influence their psychological safety, and that can be a critical component of their ability to collaborate, to innovate, to thrive. So when workplaces fail to prioritize the human element, I guess it can lead to stress and disengagement and ultimately reduce productivity, which is not in the organization's favor either.
I was muted. So definitely. Yeah. I want to talk about your book because I think you wrote your book. It came out 2022, right? And what inspired you to write 2021 even? So it's 3 years old. What inspired you to write Her Allies? And then a follow-up question, how did your personal experience influence the themes in the book?
I think, okay, so after I wrote my first book, Her Way to the Top, two realizations struck me, Vivian. First, I met women who said, well, you know what? We've done everything we were told, attended conferences, upgraded our negotiation skills, built our confidence, pursued leadership programs. Now what? And what can we do when the systems are still controlled by people who, whether unintentionally or sometimes intentionally, resist seeing us progress? Yeah. And so I was like, well, there is a point there. And that's why I really needed men to step up as allies and support women. And also I encountered well-meaning men who genuinely wanted to contribute to equality efforts, but they really didn't know where to start. And so I thought, I said, I'm going to write, a straightforward toolkit with practical, very actionable steps. And one thing I've realized, Vivian, over time is, and I know you've read the book too, that nothing is too basic. In fact, I have been repeatedly surprised by how many people overlook these seemingly obvious actions. And I've realized that, you know, irrespective of our education, background, gender, I think we've all internalized biases. So women have biases too. So I think that's why I felt like, you know, I need to write a book.
Yeah. Definitely. But also what you are saying right now is regarding, you know, not everybody knows about the lessons when it comes to inclusion or diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? So sometimes people need to be reminded of what can they do so that they can follow it, because it's not per se that these guidelines or the tips that you share, it's not that they've been taught at school, right? It's not that it's normal that it's been taught at the university, right? So when they come and work in the workplace, they assume that everything that they learn from school or from university or from other places, that's the norm, but they can rewrite the norm, especially by taking your book as a starting point or as an in-between point where they can do better, especially the men can do better, but also the women can learn what men can do better as well and educate their son, educate their husband, educate their brothers along this journey as well. That's what I took from it. Like, as a mom, what can I do to support my son to become a man, a male ally or a boy ally as well?
Thank you. That's just a great compliment. And can I just add one thing? I would also say educate themselves, because sometimes we ourselves don't realize how deeply entrenched our biases can be. And so I you know, there was a time when I was thinking, why should I write a book? An Asian brown Muslim immigrant woman telling men what to do, who's going to listen? And and I guess there already were books out there, men who had written similar material, but I guess I needed a book from a women's perspective. So I felt like, yes, you know, there's so many men speaking about it, but I really wanted to speak from a women's perspective, what that could look like.
Definitely.
Yeah, but thank you so much. I mean, it's lovely to hear that, you know, it's something which you can, as a mom, this is something you can use for your son to
definitely. I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, the corporate stuff, but I am converting and translating. Okay, what are the things that I can take from your book and make it more accessible to my 11-year-old so that he can practice all the different steps that he can take away from becoming an ally? Because one thing that I'm not ready, or I don't want to hear from my child or complaints about my child, is my child was not acting up as an ally. I want my son to be an ally, no matter what the background is or what their preferences are. I want to be able to support my child to become an ally for all people, period. Let's go to the common misconceptions, right? Because oftentimes people talk about you know, I can be an ally, or I want to be an ally, or I am an ally, and they assume that they are an ally, right? By doing just a one-time thing. How does your book address these misconceptions? So what are the misconceptions, and how does your book address these misconceptions? Maybe you can share a top three.
So I think I really wanted to make sure was to make this an easy process. So of course, it's not about performative allyship. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to move away from blaming and shaming and create mm-hmm. a safe space where I invite men with compassion and say, look, this is what you can do. And I feel the three biggest misconceptions about allyship I want to address was that allies can't make mistakes. And many believe yeah. that as an ally, you always need to get it right. And reality, mistakes are a natural part of the process. So it's about mm-hmm. acknowledging the missteps and what you do after making the mistakes that's important. The second, I think, was that allies need to have all the answers. And that's, again, a misconception, because allies must not know everything. And they realistically can't know the struggles or experiences of all marginalized groups they're supporting. But of course, allyship is about listening, and there's so many different steps that I outlined in that process. And the third thing is that allyship is not about being a savior. It's there's a common misconception that allies are there to rescue or fix problems. And in reality, mm-hmm. while it may be applicable to some women, I think real allyship is about collaboration, partnership, and creating space for marginalized voices to lead the conversation. And again, nobody's claiming that because you're privileged, you have had it easy. It doesn't mean that you have not had your own fair share of challenges. It only means that you haven't experienced the same challenges as people from underestimated communities have.
Yeah, what I see when you are sharing, or what I'm listening to while you are sharing, I feel also that people need to have a conversation and demystify their expectations of allyship within their teams, right? Make it known, make it transparent. Like, I want to show up as an ally, but sometimes as an ally, I'm tired. I need to rest and recharge myself and take better self-care. And therefore, maybe today I am an ally, you know, in general, but sometimes an allyship can show up in different ways, and then we need to provide grace in allyship showing up in different ways as well. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So your focus is on male allies. Why is it that you're focusing on the male allies for the fight of gender equality? And also, can you share the outline of your book a little bit?
Right. So, I mean, well, look, I personally believe, and I think you may also share the opinion, to truly promote equality, we have to embrace the support of the people who can yeah. be our strongest allies, and they're men, right? I really wanted to encourage men to step up and actively participate in driving change. Their involvement is frankly crucial, because particularly navigating a system and a world primarily designed for them, right? A system mm-hmm. and a world where they continue to hold very prominent yeah. positions, majority of influential roles and decision-making power. So for me, it was important to get to get partnership with those men. Mm-hmm. And that was the main goal of writing the book. How I wrote this book was I divided into four different parts. And I said, you know, challenge mm-hmm. yourself. It's easiest yeah. to begin with yourself. So look within. And I think when I mm-hmm. say look within, I really meant look within, because it was my opportunity to reflect on my own biases. Yeah. So it was, you know, reflecting on your biases, your privileges, and just because, you know, I tick a lot of boxes doesn't mean that I'm not privileged. There's so many areas where I can be privileged yeah. and I can support yep. those who are not. So, you know, understanding what influences your perspectives, your actions, and making sure that you have that ongoing self-education. The next step is challenging others. You speak up when you witness discrimination, you call it up, calling out is perhaps the most difficult part. And I was in a webinar in the morning discussing the same, and all the men were like, it's so hard to call it out. And
it is.
And you know, I never take that for granted. But then again, this is the true test of allyship. Mm-hmm. And also engaging in conversations with friends and families and colleagues to raise awareness and to advocate for fair practices. The third part of the book is about organizational culture. It's addressing mm-hmm. and confronting, you know, biases and inequities within the organization institutions that you're part of. So inclusive policies, practices, recruitment, comp and ben, all of that, you know, the whole thing. And finally, the last part, I sometimes try and skip that, but this is so important. Challenge the institutions, work towards systemic change and, you know, the broader institutional structures, policies and practice, like, you know, education bias, media bias, and political reforms.
Yeah. And when I think of what you are sharing right now at the moment, I'm also thinking about the younger generation, right? So from what age should your book be applicable or be read or be gifted?
So my book, frankly speaking, it, you know, if I always challenge this, I say to people that, you know, you're so proud of your children reading, you know, complex things, maths, solving complex maths problems and learning different languages. But when it comes to allyship, you're like, maybe this is a lot for them. I don't think so. But I have good news for you. This can be read by, I think, you know, children 12, 14 and above. But I have a children's allyship book specifically, which is coming next year.
That's exciting. So you are already creating an allyship version or an allyship book version to as a pre-courser for the books for this particular book, right? Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. What inspired you to start with that? Is that because too many people ask questions regarding their kids regarding your book?
I think as a mom of a teenager, this was something which I really wanted to share. And you know, at that age, I also wanted to make it interesting with real life scenarios. So initially it was supposed to be just A to Z concept book, but then I wrote stories and my son was pretty much involved in the process. He was now going to be 14 in December. So, you know, his friends also reviewed the book. I got input from teachers, from parents. So it was a really exciting process. And we came up with lots of different stories talking about, you name it, I've included everything in it.
Exciting.
So, I mean, hopefully it's going to be out at some point next year. I think the current book is you know, university students can read it too. But my husband, it's funny, right? So he was like, oh, I like the second book a lot because it's obviously a short. Not a virgin. And their stories, you know, nice, fun stories which children can understand.
Yeah, definitely. Is there a specific chapter or an anecdote that you believe is particularly impactful that you want to reshare with the audience?
I think the last paragraph for me is quite useful because that's where I'm, you know, it's the closing thoughts where I'm telling people, really, really pushing that message out because I'm an emotive writer. You know, all my LinkedIn posts begin and end with emotions. So, you know, I talk about this and I say, as women, we recognize and value the support of men like you, allies like you.
Yeah.
You inspire us, you empower us, you make us want to achieve more and be more because you believe in our potential. So on behalf of women around the world, please accept us in sincere gratitude for being that kind of man, because it is exactly the right kind of man we all will need to finally achieve gender equality. So I think that was my last part. I always find it quite, I just find that this was, this is personally very meaningful for me because this was my call to action.
But your call to action is also inviting the men by empowering them and letting them know that we need them, we need their support, and they are a value of us, right? Instead of them dismissing themselves like, yeah, but you can do it on your own. You can do it on your own merit. No, men also don't do it on their own merit. Men have their network where they can open up doors and can accelerate as well. And we need to leverage that as well. So I truly appreciate you for highlighting the last part and asking men, but also inviting men to join this journey as well. So thank you. How has writing Her Allies changed or reinforced your views on leadership and gender equality?
I think for me, the biggest realization was that allyship is leadership. You know, they're deeply interconnected. It cannot be treated as a separate concept. I always used to talk about allyship and leadership separately, perhaps before I wrote the book. But then I came to realize that leadership is about, you know, inspiring, guiding, empowering others to achieve their goals. And allyship also complements this by fostering trust and inclusion within any team and an organization. So, you know, being a leader means advocating for others, amplifying their voices, and addressing barriers they may face. And allyship is effectively the same. So I think, for me, it was just this realization that this is not something exclusive. I think it's just very interconnected.
Definitely, definitely. And also, I mean, I'm biased after reading, especially, you know, reading DEI books by people that I like, trust, and also follow. It's just like, okay, she said that, I feel it, and it's everything that you say that hits me to the core. But also giving people a manual of, this is what you can do. These are easy steps that you can take, and think of, start with just one step, right? We don't want to ask you to do everything all at once. Start with one step, and then when you finish with that step, move forward so that you can reach that potential, but also can support women in the workplace as well. Because like I said, companies within Europe, they don't have the luxury anymore to not activate allyship in a workplace, because whenever a woman leaves the workplace, it has an impact on those who are left behind. And those who are left behind, you don't want them to deal with work with the overload, or dealing with the workload that is so much higher than before. And also attracting talent. It's not as easy as it used to be, right? The companies are not in a position where they can just dismiss talent. So make sure that you train every individual to be an ally, especially the men to be an ally for women as well, but also women for women as well. I believe that as a woman, I learned also some valuable tips from reading this book as well. Yeah. So how have different audiences react to the book? And was there any feedback that surprised you?
Oh my God, honestly.
is this an episode on its own?
This is an episode on its own. So, and I've shared the story a number of times, but I remember when I was doing the pre-launch phase, I was interviewed by somebody who said, well, you consciously entered a minefield. And I was like, yeah, it can't be that bad. And I wish I could say any different. But I think the first week was far from welcoming. It was bad. People in my circle went off on me and they were like, why would you be so patronizing? And what's wrong with women anyway? They're fine. They're just doing fine.
Was it men that were saying that, or women, or both?
Yes, men. They're just fine. They're doing well in their careers. No one's getting harassed. And especially the sexual harassment, because there is a bit about, there is actually a whole section on sexual harassment, right? And people are actually actively dismissing it and saying, well, sexual harassment doesn't happen in this day and age. And what's with the
stuff not happening to them? Not happening to them. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so what's with the sob story? And, you know, and then are you pandering to the Western agenda? And then there were women also who were like, I don't want to climb, you know, I don't want men to help me climb the ladder, ew, or save me. And I said, well, you know what? It's not about saving necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's just about, you know, different ways in which men can show up. And anyways, thankfully, I think it didn't continue for long. I think soon after that, I did start accumulating a very loyal band of allies who are still standing by me, who love the book. And every now and then, I think what is very heartwarming is every week a message comes in my inbox. Somebody tags me. They've read the book. It was so inspiring. And they learned so much. And I think as an author, this is such a fulfilling experience. And you forget all the challenges you went through. And, you know, you need to accept it. Obviously, when you're writing a book, not everybody's going to like it. Not everybody's going to review it.
No.
Actually, I remember I wrote an article in The Independent about allyship, and that attracted trolls. And I got my first 2-star review on the book. And what did the person say? It's rubbish. Doesn't make sense. That was literally the comment. It's rubbish. It doesn't make sense. And I knew it, that it was somebody from, because I write articles in the newspaper, so it was somebody from the newspaper who had, found the fact that I've written a book and made it a point to go and leave a terrible review. But then, of course, there are lots of great reviews, which makes up for it. So that's reassuring.
Wow. I just want to share a comment. I'm not seeing who is sharing it, but I'm trying to look at LinkedIn to see who is sharing it. So somebody is saying, yes, of course, it ties right into the discussion you and Daniele Fandanka had about male allyship, right? So just want to see, it's Andre Damanin who shared it. So thank you, Andre, for sharing that as well. I did a conversation with him earlier this year, and it's really good that you're sharing this. So thank you, Andre, for sharing this as well. I want to go back to the other response. So you mentioned the positive responses, right? I also feel like men fathers can learn a lot from your book, as in creating a safe space for their daughters, right? Because you don't want your daughter to work in a workplace where people don't understand male allyship or how men can step up as allyship as well. So think of it as... Maybe it's too far from me. I don't know. But especially when you have daughters or when you have a kid, think of it what you can learn so that you can provide your kids the valuable tips so that they don't encounter all the yuckiness or all the exclusion that can be present in the workplace as well. So I do believe that. I know that the title is Her Allies and it's about men, but I also believe that whatever your gender is or whatever your gender identity is, there is a lot that you can learn from the book as well. And
I just wanted to quickly add, we've met so many men who reached out to me actually did say that I have daughters or I have twins or I have, my daughters just entered the workforce, or, I have two young daughters and so their personal why was the fact that they were now fathers, brothers or partners, and they really wanted to make a difference in the lives of their children, particularly their daughters and also their sons, to be honest.
Yeah,
because especially their sons for all genders. Yeah.
So a topic that sometimes is being, I wouldn't say it doesn't get the attention that it should have, right? And I want to bring up the word intersectionality. So how do you address intersectionality of gender with the other aspects of identity, right?
Yeah. So intersectionality, as you know, is important, right? It's the additive identity model versus the single determinant model, where you believe that it's just a single determinant is stopping your access to power, when in reality, it's not just about gender. It can be about your skin color, your faith, ethnicity, sexual orientation, ability, so many different things, even ageism. So, and I think it's about how some women can face amplified marginalization as a result of the different social identity factors they represent. And I do encourage men in the book to not make assumptions. So, for example, even, people would, it's so typical for people to say, the BAME group, or women of color. But in reality, even within that group, first of all, I think, you need to tell to people, these are Black women or brown women or Asian women, indigenous women. So you need to name the group. And then you can't make assumptions that just because they're all sort of in the marginalized category, all their challenges are going to be the same. You need to be respectful, curious, and not just muddle up things. I feel, and I'm going to say this with all due respect, sometimes I've seen that many well-intentioned allies and many well-intentioned white male allies, they often miss the intercultural, intersectional nuances required for effective allyship, and that can limit the impact of their efforts. Because when they talk about women, sometimes they're only talking about women whose values they align with, or women they speak to, women in their circle, and not women from different intersectional groups. And I think that is something which... it's really important to me. I always make it a point, obviously, as women who tick so many boxes herself, it's important that men show up for all groups of women and not just the women like they look like or women in their circle.
Like I said, and I'm going to repeat it again, companies cannot afford to exclude women no matter what background. So adding cultural sensitivity, adding cultural intelligence, but also adding the guidelines that you share to become an ally in the workplace for women can be so much of value for companies out there. So I'm just reiterating again, you cannot lose women in the workplace. You cannot lose women in the workplace. So next thing, what advice do you want to share for readers who want to implement the principles within of allyship in their daily lives?
I would say just start small. It doesn't have to be mm-hmm. anything big. And if you feel overwhelmed and if you feel intimidated, then find support, find the right network for you. And, you know, I've been saying this now for many months, but allies need allies too.
Definitely.
So, you know, you find your safe space, find people who you can lean on and people you can vent out to, because it is an isolating journey. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't always get credit, and sometimes you may not always have a lot of people joining you on this allyship journey. You'll make mistakes, and that's all fine. But, you know, make sure that you have that you have that support system to fall back on.
Yeah.
Because you would need that too. But then again, it's just about, I would say, if you want to be an ally, literally just begin by challenging yourself, because it's always mm-hmm. easier to be able to challenge yourself before you can challenge others. So, you know, look at your own biases, just reflect, you know, ask questions, think about, what is it that I'm not seeing? Am I making any assumptions on the basis of, you know, gender, ethnicity, race, faith, X, Y, Z? And I think the more you challenge yourself, the better ally you're going to be. And embrace mm-hmm. this with humility. You will not have all the answers. You don't need to have all the answers. You will make mistakes, and that's absolutely fine. It's fine to be vulnerable. And just humanize the allyship process as much as possible.
I want to add a few things, because you mentioned like you're going to make mistakes. So today I shared a video about my son talking about the growth mindset. Learn from your mistakes by applying the growth mindset so that the next time you won't make that same mistake, right? Because you're all human. At least I assume everybody who's listening and watching this is all human, and you're not out here in the world to set your team or your coworkers up for failure. I assume that you have the best intention and that you are trying to act from that space. But sometimes having the best intention is not always the best impact, on you're not creating the best impact. And on the other hand, I understand that you're saying like, find your accountability partners or find your support system. But I also would like to add one or two people who are not within your circle, who might be different than you. So think about how you can support somebody who doesn't look like you or doesn't have the same education, and have that conversation with them so that you don't place yourself in your support bubble, but have that conversation with them openly, like, okay, I want to learn and become a better ally, but I also want to make sure that I'm not stepping on any toes. Can I have a conversation with you regarding that, right? There you're asking consent, but then you're also showing up transparency, and you're also showing up in a way that feels authentic instead of tell me what I need to know, right? Absolutely. I don't feel like that's authentic as well. So Continue.
I think I said that this is such valuable advice, mm-hmm. Vivian. I think if you don't expand your circle and you're only interacting with people who are just like you,
exactly,
you wouldn't know any better. So to be able to be a good ally, I would say, first of all, educate yourself. You know, sometimes there's a lot of cultural taxation and exhaustion, because we feel that, you know, why do I have to educate you? And sometimes we will, but I think if you're able to do your own education, do your mm-hmm. own research, and then just come to us with genuine questions, mm-hmm. Then we'll be able to help. But if you're expecting us to explain everything to you from scratch, you know, just basics, then that becomes a little taxing on us too. But definitely interact with people different from you, otherwise you would never know what to look out for and how to support.
I want to share something that I think will be heartwarming for you because you don't see it, but I'm going to share something. So Gregory Pike, I don't know if you know him, but he's sharing that. And that's what's great about her allies. Allyship is a layered approach. Start small, do what you can, learn about yourself, understand privilege, which is a very important thing, and definitely have your own ally. So thank you, Gregory, for sharing that. We appreciate you for sharing
that. Thank you, Gregory. He's a great ally. Thank you so much.
Amazing. So let's see. Are there any particular stories, voices? You mentioned your child, that you are writing a children's version of the book, right? You mentioned a few things about the trolls that show up. What are other stories that you want to share or voices that you want to share from a personal perspective and why?
I think for me, the biggest reflection was my own biases. And, you know, there was a story I shared, I think it was by Werner Myers, and she says that, you know, she's an inclusion expert. And she shares this story about the fact that she was flying. She was on a plane, and the pilot was female. And she was thrilled that the pilot was female and was flying it because, you know, she said that, oh, women are, you know, doing all these amazing stuff, entering space. And, you know, that really prompted excitement. However, when the plane started experiencing turbulence, she started questioning the female pilot's skill and wondering if the pilot was even capable of flying the plane. And I think that's a question that she never would have had with a male pilot. Yeah. So, and Werner realized that the anxiety made her lean on a bias she never thought she had. And for me, that was such an eye-opening experience because truly I have been doing this a lot too. I mean, not a lot, but of course, I mean, I have been doing
You're human. Everybody's biased. Human.
Absolutely. Everybody's biased. So I have been, you know, I shared the story again and again. I remember a few years back, my son called me out and he was talking about his cricket team. And I said, I was just naming all his boy cousins. And he said, Mama, don't you think that's a little bit sexist? What about my girl cousins? And I was like, oops, yeah. And he was the one, because I have really heartwarming stories from his perspective, because when I was explaining to him about the gender gap, the wage gap, and he came up to me and he said, oh, now I know, you know, and again, this is not to sort of undermine, but he has a favorite series of books. Let's not name it. But he said, Mama, I noticed the Mr. category of the books has more books and the Miss category of the books has less books. Now I understand when you said that women are not getting equal share. And oh my God, Vivian, that was something which I had never noticed before. Yeah. But the fact that he noticed was just something so heartwarming for me. So yeah, and I think that was one of the stories that prompted me to write a book on allyship with children, because I was like, you know what, this, you need to start young. You need to shape the impressions when they're being formed. Catch them young, they say.
Definitely. I noticed something similar when it comes to leadership books. How many books are written by women? How many books are written by women of color? And how many books are written by men? How many books are written by white men? How many books are written by men of color? And you can definitely see a distinction of variances where some books get high praises, some books get less praises. And I'm curious about that as well, given that perspective. Like, when are we going to normalize that there are female leaders out there who can add value no matter what gender? So I truly believe also your book can be a part of the foundation for all leaders, no matter what your gender is, because I truly believe that there are guidelines that you share, tips that you share that can be applicable for leaders to show up and to support their team members as well.
Thank you so much. That's really kind.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So we have reached the final question, and I really like what you were saying about your book. But I also want to be cautious of the time. And I am curious about 2030. We have, like, let's say 5 years to go, because 2024 is already ending, right? So 5 years till 2030. What is your wish when it comes to humanizing the workplace and men stepping up as allies for women? What do you want to see?
Oh, wow. I have so many wishes. But I guess by 2030, I would say I really, really wish to see workplaces where empathy and, you know, inclusion and equity, particularly not just equality, but equity, are embedded into every level of leadership and culture. And I really want to envision environments where men are actively stepping up as allies for women, because I'll be honest, it is a struggle to recruit men as allies in the workplace. Even men themselves find it to be a difficult process. And men, not just, I guess, as supporters, but as true partners, because I believe that allyship is about partnering with each other. So collectively dismantling systemic barriers, I think, really wish that allyship, I know it's a word which has earned some sort of backlash, but for me personally, it's not about terminology. It's about, you know, challenging biases. It's about amplifying the underrepresented voices. It's about fostering spaces where people feel safe and everybody can thrive equally.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And you mentioned a word that immediately I had to say something: empathy. I am, you know, everything. I love the word empathy, but also for those who don't know what empathy means, empathy is being able to place yourself in someone else's shoes and understand that to support them. So it's not pity. It's not the sympathy part where you add a layer of pity. You add your heart, you listen to them, you actively listen to them, and to understand that their situation that might be challenging and you can provide support from that aspect. Oftentimes, people don't know what it is to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes because they don't have the same lived experiences or they don't have the same work experiences, right? So what I often provide is training via virtual reality by using realistic scenes for you to get a taster of the invisible things that are invisible for you, but for so many people, from people from underrepresented groups, they are visible, right? So see what happens when somebody who is neurodivergent, the challenges that they are facing in the workplace, or see what happens when power and privilege goes into overdrive of different genders as well, but also see what happens if somebody is from a different, has a different gender identity, and what challenges they have, right? Because the moment that we unlock empathy, that's also the moment that you can step up and understand where they are coming from. Because too often, when I look at the media, but also when something happens like harassment or Me Too or some other things that are causing exclusion, too often we sit on the sidelines and say like, but why didn't you say something? Why didn't you do this? Or why did this happen to you? Or this person was so nice. I don't believe that. But too oftentimes people don't understand that it already takes a lot of courage. And on the other hand, this particular traumatic experience causes people to fight, flight, and freeze. So it's not an easy feat to have a conversation about that. And as a leader, as a person, I believe that you can unlock empathy through virtual reality, but also can unlock empathy to show the support as well. So I appreciate you, Hera, for sharing, you know, a high level what your book is about and how it can support men and also women and also other people as well to support them to become a true ally. So thank you for being a guest speaker. And for those who have questions, share your questions in the comments as well. I'll make sure that Hera sees this as well. But thank you. And until next time, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, Vivian.
Of course, always. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.